This is Bart Isley. I'm here with Ryan Yeaman for the latest edition of the Scrims Play podcast. And right off the top, we'd like to thank the SP podcast presenting sponsor, C&G Paving. If you want your paving or asphalt job done right the first time, you want C&G to knock it out. With 30 years of experience under owner Jeff Gray, this family-owned local business has been taking care of roads, parking lots, and driveways across Central Virginia for decades. And with a 5-star rating on Facebook, you know they're going to get it right. Give them a call at 540-456-6179 today for a free estimate.
This is Bart Isley. We're going to jump right into the Scrims Play podcast here in a second, but also wanted to encourage you to stick around for a new segment that we're adding on to the end of the podcast, The Other Side. We're going to do a terrific, you know, a really fun interview that we did with Sally Vick, a St. Anne's Belfield girls basketball player who had a really interesting winter. So stick around for the end of that. Right now we're jumping into it with Ryan and I for the latest edition of the podcast.
This is Bart Eisen. I'm here with Ryan Yeaman for the latest edition of the Scrims Play podcast. We return after a hiatus.
A sabbatical.
But we're happy to be back, and we'll start with the Smooth Operator of the Week, sponsored by C&G Paving. And it's pretty easy to say, you know, any of these guys from Stab Boys of Lacrosse, but Emmett Barger. Emmett Barger was the guy, a tremendous, he and Connor Schellenberger, obviously you can pick between the two of them, but Barger, man, 5 goals, a bunch of assists against Cape Henry in the first round of the state playoffs on Saturday. It's really great to see a Stab team that, you know, has been out of sync, not really out of sync, but has like really been facing a lot of heartbreak, a lot of 1-goal losses all year, to see them get back into a groove at the end of the regular season and then have a really nice easy win in the first round, setting them up for the state quarterfinals. We've seen them do this before as a 6 seed. We're going to jump into them a little bit later more, but Barger, man, is the Notre Dame bound attackman. He's just really a gritty, tough kid. And he just keeps playing all the time. He finishes really well. He's a tremendous distributor. When they are popping the ball around, moving the ball around, Barger is a big reason why.
Yeah, and we saw his game develop immensely last year because he was the guy. And with Schellenberger back, it makes this team very different. And you sort of see a guy who, you know, had to carry the load, and now he's got options. And so you just see a different game out of him again. From a decision-making process, like when you have those extra variables, you get to be really creative, and it sort of shows in his results.
Yeah, and they were sure, even in the games they lost 1 goal, the offense has been clicking, really just came down to possessions. You know, they're just an incredibly efficient team offensively.
We're at the point of the year where it's like, how good's your face-off guy?
It is, yeah.
It's really that simple.
And they got a great performance from Jago Gould in at the face-off against Cape Henry. That was a really big part of the win. Schellenberger had a big, nice day. Michael McGraw had a big, nice day. Like, when they've got those three going, they got Trent Moran going, they got a lot of options, a lot of offense. It's really tough to guard them, and if they're winning the face-off, you're in a little bit of trouble. Barger, easy pick for that one. On the girls' side, we got to just – this is hot. This is hot off the presses. This is tonight. Sydney Dombrowski out of William Monroe Girls Soccer, 5 goals against Warren County. A really nice performance from her.
Yeah, I mean, we got to know her a little bit last year. She was a freshman and just sort of burst upon the scene. And just really lengthy forward for them. Great finisher at the net, and she's got a lot of power. And just obviously, I mean – you just get better and better. I mean, that's a name, Dombrowski. Like, if you're at Monroe, it'll go down with the, you know, sort of Rachel McMasters and so forth, or DeMasters, sorry. She's going to have, you know, a chance to put up some serious numbers in this career, just her second year in. And that's Monroe girls soccer, really, just in the last 5-6 years, has really taken their game to a different level. And obviously, that starts sort of at the youth level and having people come through and continue to play at the high school level. But yeah, she gives them a huge advantage. So, you know, just a great sort of striker ability, can really stretch the field and knows how to put it top shelf.
And they got a big win a little earlier this year against Brentsville. And then now they've got to play Brentsville again this week. So, you know, a chance to really make some noise, a chance to maybe make some noise when the region tournament rolls around for William Monroe girls soccer.
So yeah, there's a good number of seniors on that team with a good amount of experience. You know, they had some playoff triumphs and some sort of upsets in the last 2 or 3 years. So a good amount of experience, and with a young player like Dombrowski playing the way that she is, you know, that gives you that extra sort of push, that turbo button that you need going into May.
No question about it. So beyond, obviously, we talked about the smooth operators, but for the bulk of this podcast, we want to jump in and do a two-pack. Two teams in every single spring sport that you know we've seen that have a chance to make some noise in the playoffs, have really performed well, or just playing great. And I think we got to start with baseball. And two teams have really risen way above the rest, I think, and it's pretty obvious who they are.
Yeah, I mean, Fluvanna comes back after last year's run with basically everybody, and they're just sort of hit the gates and running. I mean, they had a two-game stretch. They lost a district game to Orange and then an out-of-district game sort of back-to-back there. But since then, they've won, I think it's 11 straight. You know, they're sitting there like at 15-2. So they've just really picked up where they left off last year. It's just – it's a brutal lineup as far as – you know, if you're an opposing pitcher, they just have guys that can hit in every spot, and they've got so much power in the middle of that lineup. You know, the Wards bring a lot. You know, they pitch, they play great defense, they hit. They're just a tremendous sort of duo to have, and good base runners too for big boys. But yeah, they're Fluvanna's right up there. I mean, within the public schools, I mean, teams you should keep an eye on. I mean, Western is just absurdly young, but they're coming off a win over Monroe not so long ago. Monroe's another team to watch. They've had some adversity sort of at the plate so far, but Riley Owen, a fantastic pitcher for them. Keep an eye on them. And then Orange has been a really nice team this year. Cannon Davies has really done a nice job over there. He's a household name for
Orange. Got the only local win over Fluvanna, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pitching for a long time out there. And, you know, Adam Oos has done a nice job of putting that squad together. And you know, 1-9 lineup, you know, we'll see if they can sort of do what they did with the Trey Smith group, you know, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
See if they can make a run like
the Bradley Hanner group, yeah. Man. You can't leave out Hanner.
Yeah, so that's a fun team to watch. But over in the privates, I mean, it's pretty unanimous. It's in the polls every week. yeah, Miller Baseball, they run the show. They've won back-to-back state titles for a reason. But this is a completely, I mean, not, you know, total overhaul, but they lost a lot. I mean, they lost their entire battery from last year between Ethan Murray and Adam Hackenberg and Stu Barrett. And
it's a heck of a
yeah. That group. Was just yeah. That was a there was a lot of talent on that team. There's a, but they just reload and you know they're sitting come right back in and they, I mean they've been playing some really good teams going up a level playing Division One stuff. You know they played
got the big win over Benedictine.
Benedictine was big. Paul the Sixth. That was a fantastic game. They've just got, I mean, Miller's just got a little bit of everything. Ethan Chenault is, you know, that's been big horse for them. You know, he was a prominent hitter for them last year. Now he's getting to do stuff on the mound as well. Big tall kid that throws hard. They got another pretty good one, Garrett Payne.
He's darn good.
Yeah. So that gives them a great 1-2 punch. Ian Haney's another one there. But
in there's the Sykes kid too. Kid. He's a tough
he's
one.
He's a senior.
Too.
Yep. Yeah,
lefty,
so,
right?
Yeah, Matt Sykes. And so this is a team, I mean, you take those, you take a Jeremy Wagner, and then you throw in a guy like Jack Carey, who's just hitting the leather off the ball and just going yard. Nothing but big boy hitting there from a big kid, which is always fun to see.
Yeah, Grand Slam last Friday or Thursday in the championship game for the VIC, man, hit one in the first inning. When you get four in the first inning off a grand slam from a designated hitter, feel pretty good about how things are going.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Billy Wagner as a coach, he really rides these kids hard and doesn't let them coast. And puts a lot of pressure on them to, you know, trust your teammates and do the best you can out there. And the way the program sort of run is it's to get these kids into a good college. And so they're really focused on, you know, the fundamentals, you know, mechanics,
preparation,
yeah, and so it's kind of in the postseason that stuff really sort of shows up. You see the sort of execution that Miller's able to put together at bat after at bat. It's just they're just really intense as a team. You know, they have fun in the dugout, but this is work for them.
Yeah.
And this tournament coming up is big. They're the top seed. You've got a 2 seed in Greenbrier. You know, that Miller Greenbrier matchup would be fantastic. It's always good. We'll see if we can get it. There's been, you know, in this bracket a number of years, there's been some upsets. But the one thing Miller's done each time they've been the one seed the last 2 years is they've gone and won all their games. And they've done it pretty handedly.
Yeah.
So we'll see if they can do it again.
And then you got, you mentioned, I mean, we could go on and on with this roster, but the Exum kid, Jacob Exum, at shortstop, tremendous.
Sophomore.
He's a heck of a player. Henry Hardy is a heck of a player. They also got to add Jack Masloff at the, he's just gotten back from an injury. He came in and pitched in that championship game. He had thrown, I think, once the week before.
He's a hard thrower. So, they've got options, and that's what makes a championship team. Is that when you get into a bind, you can trust a bunch of different guys to throw. If you're Miller, you're feeling pretty good about the depth there.
And a quick name check on the private school side, man. Blue Ridge Baseball with the win over Covenant in the semifinals of that, or the quarterfinals of that tournament. A huge win for that program. We're all big fans of Rashad Talley.
Alamo graduate.
Yep. Makes us feel old because since we covered him back in the day, but he's coaching now. He's doing big things. It's really exciting to see what they were able to pull off. And obviously when you get – just such a mashup of kids. They got the Frazier kid from basketball. They got just all these different guys, and it's fun to see what they were able to put together. So a great finish to the year for Blue Ridge Baseball. So let's flip over to boys soccer. Charlottesville and Almar. Those are two teams that are really right there at the top right now. We know Almar coming into this year, Daniel Starr, Brandon Mann, tremendous 1-2 punch there, but they also have Roshan George. They've been really, really good. The only problem they've had is they cannot get past a Charlottesville team that is really, really good as well. A new brick house is there, patrol in the middle, and Malcolm Brickhouse. His older brother Campbell was a darn good player for them. And then they, have just a ton of different options in the back. In Kyle Leonard, he's just a lockdown defender. There's a experienced goalie in Nate Fisher, and then you move up to the top, and then Jovan Stork has just been going bonkers lately. He scored a big overtime goal against Almar that broke him out. First half hat trick against Western. Really big performance from him. And he's got help up there. Is Ayat Muhammad. There's, Brickhouse can get into the mix up there. They've just got a ton of dudes, and they just seem to be the right mix of kids, like what they had a couple of years ago when they made the run to the state final.
Well, and these guys got so much work last year. Unfortunately, they didn't get to play Albemarle twice last year. That was kind of a weird schedule. But this year, all those guys you mentioned, Muhammad and Von Stork and all those guys, they're all seniors this year. They're all really experienced. I think last year was sort of the bridge between that team that sort of makes a big run to the finals there, and now they're ready, poised to try and make another one like that.
And a lot of these guys were playing then as sophomores.
They were young
sophomores. They were young, really talented kids, and so they experienced sort of that heartbreak of that final. They, they've got a new coach, but he's the old coach because he was the assistant in Martin Braun. I mean, they want this one, and you can tell it from how they're playing.
And we saw a storyline like that play out in last year's playoffs with Albemarle. And, Brandon Mann and Daniel Starr had been on those teams that, had competed for a state title. And so, it wasn't their team. They weren't running the show, but they were key contributors. And then we saw them sort of take ownership and then go put a ship on the lake. So that's a pretty cool story if Charlottesville can sort of repeat history like that as well.
And they've got the leaders to do it, man. Von Stork is tremendous. He's going to walk on at UVA as a football player. You can tell that he's really locked in, really focused on trying to make this happen. And, Brickhouse as well, and Muhammad. I mean, that same list, you're always in really good shape when your best players are your best leaders. These guys have it. I mean, these guys are the leaders, and they're really doing a tremendous job. Kyle Leonard, man. Can't underrate how good he is. He can take away an entire side. Just a tremendous defender. And he can get up there and make some plays. I think this is a Charlottesville boys soccer team that's pretty special.
Yeah, it's a Charlottesville team that has a little bit of a flair. Previous teams have been very physical, and then there's sort of some skill mixed in. I feel like they've got a mix like that right now, too.
Definitely.
Sort of very similar looking.
Definitely. And then on the girls' side, girls' soccer, Western Almar, girls, sorry, they got tripped up against Almar, but they really have gotten into a groove of late. The Berg sisters, Katrina and Julia, are so electric up top. And then you've got Ellie Cox and Aaron Meyer. And, like, they just get the, again, they lost a lot from last year's team that had really, you know, done a lot over 2 years in those two straight state championships, and Abby Zimmerman, you know, a ton of kids that had really been a big part of what they did. And then you're like, man, I don't know how they'll be next year. And then you show up and it's the Bergs are just crushing again, which they had been doing already. And then Meyer is playing well. Ellie Cox is really playing well. And then, you know, the defenders are coming along really well. So they got tripped up against an Almar team, you know, that is always a really tough rivalry. They got another chance at them coming up this week. And that's the other squad that you got to talk about, really, in girls soccer is Almar. I mean, they a complete revamp on what they did, you know, from last year. A lot of players that they lost and a lot of, key roles that had to be filled with all the kids that graduated. And they're rolling in. They beat a Western team that we think is going to compete for a Class 3 state championship. And then, you know, they found the next big striker there in Madeline St. Amand. She's just a tremendously electric, speedy kid. They've got Maggie McMullen that is floating around in the midfield, who is really darn good. Jaya Daniel has stepped in at keeper, and she's been really good. They've got a lot of talented players all the way through, and they're young and they're kind of still fitting together in a lot of ways, and that may make things tough when it comes to 5A, but they've gotten a lot of confidence from playing, you know, getting a win against a Western and getting some other key wins. I mean, they got a lot of confidence and they seem to be getting better week in and week out.
With both those teams, yeah, you sort of look at the senior leadership, how much can you get out of them, and Catherine Yao for Albemarle, that's
a great one, man.
Yeah, that's one to look forward to there. Otherwise, you're all underclassmen, pretty much everybody that you just named. And over at Western, yeah, you've got the Bergs, you've got Kate DeJong.
Kate DeJong, way underrated as a defender, man. She is really darn good.
And Ellie Plants. So
yeah,
I mean, that's Western's got a pretty good core there. And then yeah, let's just see how the underclassmen do when the brights get light. You never know how they're going to react. The nice thing about young talent is usually they don't know the pressure that's about to come.
True,
so
yeah.
they're not sort of – there's very little anxiety that goes into sort of the big matchup. It's a little different for the seniors.
Yeah,
you know, if you don't think you're playing your last game, it has a different effect on you.
I agree. Speaking of teams that are completely senior-heavy, boys lacrosse over at St. Anne's. I think the hope – Bo Perriello talked about it, that his hope is that those seniors know what it takes, that they know the approach they've got to have, that they know that, you know, what they've got to get done to make this kind of run happen. You know, these guys were really, really young when the team made the run in 2015 – a run all the way to the state title from the sixth seed, and now that's what Stab is facing again right now. They're trying to fight their way out of that spot, and it's not an easy task. I mean, they got to take on an Episcopal team that beat them at their place, and then they've got, you know, if they can get through that, then it just gets, the gauntlet just gets tougher and tougher. So this is a really difficult, the VISA Division I tournament is a really difficult tournament. It's
just
always tough. But the top six teams this year do look like that each one of them could potentially make a run. It's very similar to the 2015 year. So,
I mean, a lot has changed since that 2015 season.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're talking about long poles like Kareem Johnson.
You go way back.
Yeah, like that's who's leading that team. Those guys are, you know.
It was a red hot goalie that got it done.
Yeah, Patrick Blake.
Yeah, no, this was the. I think it was the year. Gosh, man, there's so many good Stab teams. It's hard to even remember. But yeah, I think Blake took over for that guy the next year, and this guy ended up being a keeper at Richmond. His name's escaping me right now. But anyway, these young guys were in middle school. They got to see this, you know, pulled off, and you can hear that some of the names that keep ringing out. You can hear him in huddles. I've heard Connor Schellenberger say, like, look, like, this is what Jack Schultz was doing. You know, I mean, like, even guys, we know the Robertsons, you know, Philip, you know, Joe, but guys that have stuck around, their work ethic has stuck around. And you can always hear the ghost, I think, a little bit at Stab.
Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous. It goes so far back. I mean, Doug Tarring sort of building that program into your standard state title contender. I mean, there's just a lot of pressure. I mean, these guys, their dads all talk about it because they played there, yeah. That kind of thing. So it's a real legacy thing. Like maybe I don't know at Stab that there's a sport that sort of has more of that than the boys lacrosse.
And they're handling it well, man. They've got a really relaxed approach right now. Like we talked about Emmett Barger earlier, just a tremendous player. Connor Schellenberger is such an elite talent. But then on the back end, Kurt's kid in goal, Doug Brooks, Thomas Harry. I mean, they've got guys who are multi-talented athletes, you know, guys that contribute in a number of different sports that are stepping up and making big plays. And I think that, you know, if they can take guys like that and keep pushing and keep driving, you know, they've really got a shot. And the bottom line really comes down to that offense is so good. If they win faceoffs, they're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah. A lot of experience, like you mentioned. And then this is, I mean, one of the taller Stab lacrosse teams. They've got a lot of 6-footers on the roster.
Yeah, big guys.
You know, that never hurts to have a little added length, a little added leverage.
No question. And, you know, staying in that tournament, what Blue Ridge has done over the last 2 years is just tremendous. They got a big win on Saturday in the afternoon in the rain against Collegiate. You know, another Blue Blood Division I program. Kind of having a little bit more of a down year this year. But Blue Ridge, man, just really rose to the occasion, played them in really tough fashion. They'd beaten them earlier in the year, and by virtue of that, got to be the 8th seed. Now they got to go in and play number 1 St. Chris. But Keegan Kozak, just a ton of kids for Blue Ridge that can just really score and make some noise. And when they're in a similar situation, when they win faceoffs, when Joey Zasbo is going, then they're going to be in really good shape because they got a bunch of guys who can spin it too.
Yeah, Blue Ridge is tapping back into that Canadian tradition. A couple of those kids, Zabo, I think Tommy Collins as well. That's another big one for them. But Isis Lewis, he's fantastic. And you got Jack Charbonneau. There's a good mix of sort of sophomores and seniors.
Spencer Amaker, the mm-hmm. sophomore, man, he had a big time game in that one. And I think that's really like, you got to give it up to Mike Herring, man. They're on like coach 4, you know, over the last 10 years. And Herring has really put a different stamp on the program and just really gotten these guys ready. The young guys are contributing in a big way, just like the old guys are. These guys aren't rentals. They've got the opportunity to be around for a couple of years and really start making some noise in this tournament.
Yeah, and the cool thing for them is that they're coming in sort of already revved up, mm-hmm. playing in the 8-9 play-in game. You get sort of, I mean, I know it's an extra game in the tournament, but, you know, these kids aren't that weathered that they can't handle an extra game.
And you talked about pressure earlier with Stab, man. St. Chris is rolling in unbeaten. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure. And this is a Blue Ridge team that's kind of nasty athletic. I don't know, man. Maybe that's going to be the upset of the year right there.
Yeah, it would certainly be something. I mean, it would be, you know, the signature win of the program to be able to get a Division I win like that in a tournament. But, yeah, they got their work cut out for them.
No question about it. Girls lacrosse-wise, we're going to flip over to the publics again. Monticello and Western are just in a dogfight, it seems like, every time they play.
It's an annual tradition.
They got potentially two more matchups left in region tournament play, and then again when they drop in state tournament play. I mean, just pretty wild how often these teams have to play and how well they know each other. And it's a fun group to watch. They really kind of go at it, and it's a different, you know, it's some new names or some names that have become more prominent with, you know, the graduation of somebody like Paige McLaughlin at Monticello opens the door for more Callie Smith, more Josie Mallory, more Megan Whalen. I mean, a lot of kids that have really contributed in a really big way for Monticello in the past have really taken center stage this year, and they are really, really tough to handle offensively. If they win the draw, I think we've said this now a few times about a few different teams, but if they're winning the draw and they're spinning it, they're really good offensively. Callie Smith is really tough to stop. They can attack from behind. They can dodge from the top. Mallory is particularly savvy coming from the wing.
She stirs the drink, I think.
Yeah.
She's been there. She was on the Final Four team that made the run a couple of years mm-hmm. ago. when sort of Monticello sort of made its comeback to the forefront of the girls lacrosse community and putting their name back in there. It used to be, you know, so 10 years ago it was always Monticello and Western. Then there was just like a little bit of a dip off, and then we're back into it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mallory, like, I mean, just across the board, I mean, she's doing it in field hockey, she's done lacrosse, just like your standard senior leader, your yeoman.
Yep. Super multi-talented athlete. A lot of fun to watch. Western did get the second. They got the win over Monticello, which I think gives them a seeding edge when it comes to the region tournament, or at least gives them some kind of edge when it comes to the Jefferson District regular season championship. I don't know. A lot of that stuff has gotten confusing now. Western did get that big win, and they are led. Maddie Shearer is just tremendous on the draw. You know, in girls lacrosse, a lot of times it comes down to who has the fastest player. And a lot of times Shearer looks like the fastest player. Callie Smith, man, electric fast. But Maddie is a similarly speedy, quick player. She can make things really tough. If she's got the ball off the draw, she's either driving and dishing or driving and finishing. So, you know, and it's not just her. You know, you got Reed Ferguson, who can really step up in a big way, Anna Kreinbaum. Just a lot of really good options for them. And then defensively, they're really tough. They've got some girls who have been back there for a while who really know how to take care of business back there. So while they're young and had to retool a little bit, they have really improved as the season's gone on.
Yeah, I mean, that you mentioned Ferguson and Kreinbaum, you know, a couple senior leaders there. But that's a team that's sort of driven by that sophomore and junior class, which
Libby Carbo is electric good. I think she's a sophomore, and I think, you know, when you got her and Shearer and like clicking, you know, they're going to be really good for a while. We're used to Western girls lacrosse being pretty darn good. They're always pretty good, but they're going to be good for a while. And I think that, you know, when you got Carbo, Shearer, that's a really good punch that they've got kind of going there. And it seems like every game they have a different kid step up and score 4 or 5. So a really balanced approach to what Western's doing. So we're probably going to see Western versus Monticello at least one more time, maybe two more times.
It's like Blue Ridge Miller basketball.
It's just, it's a whole season series that you get to enjoy. Over in softball, one team has really risen up as a top, and we've gotten used to this group being sort of the cream of the crop in the area, and that's Madison County softball. They won a state championship 2 years ago, and they've got a tremendous 1-2 punch in pitching. Emily Seal has recently gotten back in and started throwing again, and Logan Estes is just a tremendous pitcher. They're just really tough in the circle.
Yeah, I mean, the experience that Madison has is just sort of out of this world. To have a group that's sort of been intact this long together. Most of these kids are actually juniors. Morgan Clark, Sophia Adams. But when you have a starter of Estes' caliber, I mean, that's what matters in softball. Just how much can you put out there in the circle? It's been fun for them, over the years, last couple of years, to be able to mix up, you know, throw Estes for a couple innings and then throw Seal for a couple innings. But they're both such strong pitchers. I don't know that there's a huge difference in terms of velocity if you're a batter that it throws you that off. I almost wish that, one of them was a junk baller or something like that. Madison County softball, it's a proud tradition up there. Jesse Yell does a great job with that group, and they always have so many girls. There are going to be pinch running situations that are really important where somebody's going to come in and do a job there. And it might be the only action they see in that game, but like they were prepared for it. And we'll see if they've played a pretty solid schedule, you know, going out there and playing some of the bigger teams that they won't see in 2A, playing a lot of 3As and playing Orange and 5As and stuff like that. So that always bodes well for them. But the seniors on the team, you know, there's sort of the Emily Prices, Logan Estes's, Kaylin Boone's, those types, they're the ones that matter. And then, sort of their old rival on the other side is you take a look at William Monroe
softball. I mean, it's a program that last year could mash. And some of the reason they get matched was Alexis Whalen, who's gone down. I think she's at Longwood, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
I believe so, yes.
Wherever she is, she's mashing because she showed up on the Twitter feed putting some out in college as well. But they are still hitting. They're doing really well, and they settled in a little bit in the circle. They found some options there. And they're always – this is another, like you said, a proud tradition in Madison. Monroe softball is always a pretty darn good team.
Yeah, yeah. Greg Breeden has sort of built this up after sort of spending a long time with the baseball team working with Mike Maynard over there. He slides over to softball and takes over, and he's got a whole bunch of Beals on his team. Caitlin Beal, Lacey Beal, and Monroe's been dealing with some injuries. That's never fun, but Jessica Ford is as good a softball player as you're going to get. Yeah. She's headed to JMU for a reason. Yeah, there's some good pitching now. Emma Pickett getting back into the pitching game for them has been huge. So they've got that was sort of an area that they had to worry about in years prior, and just getting sort of reliability out of those positions. A freshman that we've heard her name before. She's been pretty good in all the other sports. Mara Wolford, she's been fantastic for them. And so that's a great addition when you have a freshman sort of contribute like that. But given the last name, no real surprise there.
Keegan Wolford, 13 all ODAC for Shenandoah. Yeah. Shenandoah won the ODAC championship. Congratulations to Keegan Wolford, a guy that we covered for, it felt like, 14 years. Keegan was around from the jump. So.
Yeah, and his sister, I guess, is going to do the same.
Yeah, it's the same deal, man. If you're a Wolford and you don't start as a varsity player, man, I feel for you. You become the Cooper Manning of the group. So,
That's a tough role. Yeah.
Tough role. So
yeah, there's a little bit of a monkey on the back when it comes to playing Madison all the time. They come so close so many times. Just matter like how do they get past that team? But they don't have to see them in the playoffs. These teams split off, and those teams make each other better. And it's a really great rivalry if you ever get to see it. I mean, those kids grew up playing together forever. There's just a lot to it.
It's awesome. Last sport we're going to talk about and kind of dive into is tennis. And this one is, it does seem again this year to be all about the Western boys and the Western girls. The Western boys are, probably the best, maybe the best team in the state, regardless of class. They're the defending state champs. They brought back Gavin Seagraves and Alex Ickes, who are at the 1-2, and they're really tough. Jack Tribble and Simon Rader are also back. I mean, they're just a loaded squad. Certainly they still have to get it done and accomplish it, but they seem to be on track for probably winning another state title. Seagraves is tremendous, headed to Navy. Ickes is just an incredible junior who is pushing, and now they've teamed up in doubles. Odds are good they're going to be rolling to that double state title as well. So it's fun to watch what the Western boys were able to put together, and they just keep rolling along. They've changed coaches like 6 times over the last years. That program just kind of keeps clipping.
It sort of steers itself somehow.
Yeah,
it's funny how talent works like that.
Yeah, that kind of talent. Yeah. I mean, just elite talent. And then the Western girls are playing really well right now. They have regrouped and revamped a little bit as they keep kind of graduating really good players out of there. But Corinne Jennings is back. And then they got Austin Winslow and Stephanie Haas and then Sarah Enman. A really nice top four that are playing really well. And I think that, we're seeing them clip together 9-0 wins, 9-0 wins, 9-0 wins. And the same thing with the boys, a lot of 9-0 wins. And I actually heard that Western's boys, I think, played a tough match with Charlottesville where they played some backup players. Some guys a little further down on the ladder, like 5-4. And then in the second meeting, they took them on and won 9-0. So, these are really good, really dominant tennis teams. And, we're going to get a chance to see what they do come region tournament and then state tournament time. So a lot of action in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's about to get busy.
This is Bart Isaac of Scrimmage Play. You just heard Ryan Yeaman and I breaking down some spring sports action. I'm really excited now to introduce a new segment of the podcast we're calling The Other Side. So many local student athletes that we profile have interests that range beyond the field or the court or the pool. And while we spend a lot of time talking, writing, and chronicling what's happening in sports, we don't spend enough time talking about what local athletes are doing off the field, the other activities, interests that occupy their time. that's too bad, really, because often there's a major passion that can, and that passion can become the interest that drives careers and lives, which brings us to the first edition of The Other Side. We sat down with St. Ennis Belfield's Sally Vick, a member of the Saints VISAA Division I state runner-up squad in girls basketball, who this year got involved in the STAB Theater Program's production of Beauty and the Beast. That created some interesting situations, including Sally playing in an LIS title game that the Saints won before rushing to the theater to play her role as a candlestick on opening night. But Sally can tell us all about that, and here's our interview with her.
Sally, tell me, you know, obviously you had a really eventful winter. How did, you know, what kind of first got you interested in the performing arts?
Well, I was new to STAB last year, and they did a play and a musical that a lot of my friends or peers at school and classmates were involved in. And so it was like a Thursday night in the performance last year, and me and my friend Scotty just wanted to go and check it out. And I just thought it was, like, so cool and so, like, unexpected about how, like, big a deal it was and all the productions. And it was really, really good. And so then I was just like, I want to do it. So,
So obviously, you're an athlete, and a lot of that stuff comes first for you. How did you kind of start to fit it into what you were doing it schedule-wise?
So at St. Anne's, we do this intensives period after Thanksgiving break. And between Christmas break, where all of our classes actually stop and we do like one deep dive into a subject that you sign up for and like two or three teachers, and that's all you do. And you don't really have much homework, and that is the time when basketball starts and the musical starts. And so that kind of gave me the opportunity to start something like this because my academic load wasn't as heavy. So I could do basketball after school, and the musical practices range from like 6:45 to 8, and basketball 4:10 to 6:30.
So obviously a lot of preparation goes into both these things, basketball. And, you know, did you find a lot of similarities teamwork-wise between the two activities?
Honestly, yeah. Like when we had to do big group dance numbers and you have like a big stage or a big room you're working in, and so many people that you have to choreograph and dance with and work around. And then at the same time, like the directors and teachers in the room are organizing and watching and critiquing. And then you get the same thing on the basketball court, like placement and zones and where you're supposed to be, and then your coach. So I think it was similar.
Yeah. Did you know, obviously this is something that kind of helps you become more a part of the school's fabric, I would guess, too. Did it feel like that was part of the appeal of it, too?
Yeah, just like being around people that I normally wouldn't spend my time with, I think. That was neat.
Yeah. You know, when you start trying to put two things like that together that are both time intensive, you know, how much did you have to have, you know, help from Phil Stinney as a basketball coach and David Lowry for, you know, running this production? Did you have to kind of fit the schedules together a little bit?
Yeah, I think it was just a, like, communication on my part, because they were both willing to work with me and know I was doing both things. I think basketball definitely took priority for me. So, like, games or practices, like, I would be coming late to musical or have to miss something. And then it was a matter of Mrs. Harris and Mr. Lowry helping catch me up. And they worked with me a lot with that.
The energy in an auditorium, the energy in a big game, you know, how similar are those?
I think they're similar but also different. Like, I'll just tell you a difference. Like, in the theater, we will run a number and smile and energy, and then it'll end, and then they might think we did things wrong, disappointed, and then they'll start coaching you and giving you, like, a serious talk. Like, I don't want to say mad at you, but stern voices. And then, like a coach would in a game. And then it's, like, after they finish, then you go back on stage, and it's all smiles and dancing and energy, and, like, everything's right. And you just see, like, people, like, put these, like, character performances on, and then but being so serious off it. So in basketball, like, you might have, when you need play focus and serious, you see that same serious and focused energy on the court. But on the stage, it was like focused and serious, and then you have to get into this goofy, smiley energy character.
Yeah, you don't have to do that, I guess, in basketball when Jovai is frustrated about something.
Yeah, so. Then you just show the frustration.
you kind of touched on it there, but how different is it to perform as a basketball player versus performing as somebody in the theater?
I guess, like, basketball clothes are a lot more comfortable than a candlestick costume. And, I mean, what I said just about the energy and the smiles and laughs and the dancing. But it's still, like, they expect the same, like, intensity, I guess, or focus, like, from you. And singing. And then on the court, I mean, you give it all you got, but you're not. It's just giving different things, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The, you know, obviously all that work that you put in kind of culminated in one, that first night, the opening night, and playing in the LIS tournament that day. You know, how did you kind of approach that day and get prepared for that day?
So the week, like, leading up to the show, they call it Tech Week, and that's, like, the most, like, intense theater week ever. Every single night you're doing, like, a whole act or both acts. Like, we did a first act night, second act night, third act night. So those nights would go late, like 9:30. And basketball practice would go to 6:30, and this is leading up to our LAS tournament, which was a huge week for us. So those weeks were kind of, those, that was probably the most, like, stressful time of the period, just because the practice were going so late, and all I wanted to focus on was the tournament. And so
how did you kind of break that down and make that work?
Academically, that was, like, I talked to my teachers, because at this time it was also leading up to spring break, so we were getting a lot of our final things before the period. So my teachers were giving my work on the weekend for the week, so I could work on it over the weekend and then do school, basketball, then musical every day.
Just rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
You know, does that just kind of come down to just sort of bearing down and kind of getting through something like that? Or, you know, like, does that just become sort of taxing, or was it exciting to be a part of that many things going on at the same time?
It was exciting. I like being busy, so it was fine. And then also, when you're not on stage at musical practice, you can do your work. And so I would just use that time to do that.
Yeah. You played one of your best games of the year in that LAS title game against a really tough opponent in Trinity, and then went and performed right after that. Did you get pretty jacked up, pretty fired up for that? Or, you know, how'd you pull that off?
Yeah, I just think all the, like, excitement leading up to the game, and also when you have so much going on, you're almost more, like, laser focused on everything you're doing, because you have to be, or else, I don't know. I mean, I was focused always, but also in that game, like, when they have better guards than most opponents we play, they can take away a lot of things our guards do. So that just opens up more opportunities for me. And when they can't get their shot off inside, they have to kick it out. And so they just created for me, and I would hit the easy shots.
So what's next for you? You know, you talked about trying to experience everything that STAB has to offer. They take advantage of this moment. What, like, is there something else that's next for you that you want to figure out, or another performance, another play? You know, what's next?
I don't know. So right now, I joined the varsity soccer team, and I've never played soccer before, so that is another new experience, which I'm enjoying. And we've had two games. We won one, and we're tied. And now our travel basketball season is starting up with the Virginia Bells and the Vaba Bruins, which I play with both of them. And then we'll see for next year. I don't know if I'll be doing the musical. My friend Jamie did it with me this year, and she loved it, and she's like, I'm doing it next year, I want a bigger role. And she's like, you're doing it too. But I have not decided yet.
So pretty awesome stuff. You can look forward to another edition of The Other Side coming up soon. Really enjoyed sitting down with Sally Vick. Want to thank her for diving in and taking that time to discuss what was obviously a really fun experience for her. So really appreciate it, and hope you'll listen next time.